Big show planned as we sit in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, a bustling Michigan Avenue. Oh, couldn't have been a nicer weekend, could it? I don't think so. But we're here, and we're here for you. 312-981-7200. That's the number. When you call in, you'll be talking to Cody. Yeah, I took last Sunday off to golf. He's the executive producer from Rockford, Illinois. Oh, my goodness, that's an exciting town. Call in. If you're nice to him, you get to me. That's how it works. The text number, you know, that's the same number, 312-981-7200. Facebook and Twitter, it's Brian Noonan Show, so get involved there as well. It has been a couple of weeks since we spoke. A lot has happened. We're going to talk to Karen Conti, of course, after 8 o'clock. We'll be talking big legal stories, and we'll be answering your legal questions after 8. At 6:30, though, we're going to tip a few back at Big Irish Whiskey Fest tomorrow at Fado, so we'll talk a little bit about that. Then we have to get into what the hell is going on in this city with the gun violence, because one of our WGN workmates, a guy I've had the pleasure of working with many times, had an incident the other morning. You may have heard him. He was on with Dean Richards this morning. I saw his Facebook post earlier today, and it scared the hell out of me. And then some shocking statistics about the gun violence and the expressway shootings here in Chicago. So we'll get into that after 7 o'clock, because it can't all just be fun and games when people are dying all over the place. This is getting crazy. But good to be back. Roger, I know I want to just real quick, I know you've been posting about your dad who had his 99th birthday, and I know he was ill. You took him to the hospital yesterday. How are things going with that?
We took him in about 11 o'clock last night. Got him into a private room around 3 this morning. The last text I got from my wife was that he's sleeping. He's doing a little bit better.
Good.
Not sure. The initial diagnosis was possible congestive heart failure, but in a preliminary status.
Okay.
He's hanging in there. He's sharp as a tack. Every time somebody came into the emergency room and they said, well, where does it hurt? He held up the finger that the oxygen.
Oh, that was bothering him the most. Listen, everything else is fine. This pinching on my index finger, doctor. I don't know where you studied medicine, what butcher shop you got your degree from, but this is killing me.
Yeah. So and he's smiling and laughing. And
he's 99. Yes, it was his 99th birthday.
Yeah.
Holy cow! Yeah. I'm guessing not a chance that I am going to make 99. What is he? Does he have a secret to his longevity? Other than you just driving him insane and his will to live just outlast you?
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah, it's his will to see you're not going to make it.
Right.
I don't know.
Does he drink or smoke?
No.
So it's not like
he used to.
Not like one of those people who are going to go, you know what? I lived this long because every day I did 3 shots of blackberry brandy and smoked unfiltered Lucky Strikes, and I ate red meat every morning, noon, and night, and I never jogged.
And see, here's the deal. He used to. In his prime, he not to excess, but a little drink before dinner, go out drinking with the guys, beer at the game and the barbecue, lots of red meat. He'd smoke,
nice.
But he quit that long time ago, and he's still, he's too ornery to quit.
Some men are too mean to die.
Exactly.
That's the other thing. My wife says that about me. That I may be, in fact, too mean to die. And I keep pushing it. I keep trying to find out if that's actually the case. And after, I hope things continue, that it continues to go in the right direction.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's very good.
Thank you.
And you're very welcome. And well, listen, we've all worked together for a long time, so everybody knows what's going on here. So I'm not going to waste. I'm not going to talk a lot about this now. We're going to talk about it a lot more on the web exclusive podcast that we're going to record later. But I finished the cross country road trip with my daughter, and it is she is now in Los Angeles on her own, about to start her big internship tomorrow, and it was one of those things that I'm glad we did it, and everything went very well. We didn't have any issues until Friday, when we had already been in L.A. for 2.5 days. So in the car, it was fine. I will say this. Here's a little music tip. And rarely do I give... Cody, when was the last time I gave a music tip?
Aught 6?
Would that have been correct?
I'd say so.
Somewhere around aught 6, I gave a music tip. If you have not availed yourself, and I know I'm probably late to the party. People are going to go, man, we've been listening to this for months. If you have not listened to the Hamilton soundtrack, You are missing out on a cultural experience that rivals, that is unrivaled, unparalleled in the history of entertainment. I'm going out on a limb. I may have to be on Dean's Sunday morning show to talk theater with him now because I am so into the. I was predetermined to hate this soundtrack because when we went, if you'll recall, a couple weeks ago, I went to New Orleans to help pack my daughter up and bring all her stuff back so she could then listen to the life. So we go down, so we bring her back so she can go to L.A. to intern in show business for the summer and then come back for 2 weeks and then jet off to Spain for a semester. That's a nice life.
Very nice.
Sure, somebody's got to have one.
Yeah.
If it's not me, I guess it might as well be somebody I know.
And you're living vicariously through her, of course.
Yeah, no.
Yes, that's you are.
No, it doesn't work that way because I don't get any of the visceral... I don't get any of the fun. I just have to watch somebody else do it. I'm not. I'm happy that she gets to do it.
But and that's
I'm not
the
living
gist
vicariously
of that.
Through her.
Oh, no, well.
She's not doing it like to make me feel better or to make me seem more important. She's doing it because she wants to, and I'm like, oh, well, okay, good. But anyway, so we go down to pack her up, right? And there's tension in that dorm room. I was, because she had so much stuff, plus she was stressed out over finals. So we're trying to pack, and she has this Hamilton cranked up to ear-splitting levels, mm-hmm. to the point where we're shouting across this dorm room. And at one point, because I am the caring father, I think I yelled, can you turn that S down? Yeah, because that's how, you know, that's how I get my message across. I communicate in a calm, measured way. I let my mood, I try to push that down so I'm emotionless when I talk mm-hmm. to people.
Yeah.
Turn that S down. And that met with nothing.
You
nothing
got the
good.
Glare. Did you get the little glare?
I got a lot. I got yeah. the eye roll, all of that. So she turned it down, and then she made a pronouncement the week she was home. You know, we'll be listening to the Hamilton soundtrack the whole way out to L.A.
Oh, boy.
You can imagine how I responded mm-hmm. to that. You know, well, if you're driving, you can listen to whatever the hell you want, but if not, you know, driver picks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me fast forward. Sidebar, Your Honor. We were going to split the driving, or at least I was going to have an assistance. I drove, we got in the car last Sunday morning at 6 a.m. I flew out of LAX yesterday at 11 a.m. During that time, we covered over 2,500 miles. How many miles do you think my daughter drove of the 2,500? I'll set the over-under at
okay.
100 miles. The over-under. Cody, would it be over or under 100 miles?
I already know this, so I'll let Roger guess.
All right.
Oh, it's got to be under 100.
Under 100 is correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Under 100 by how much?
I'd say by about 50 miles.
No, by 100. It'd be under 100 by 100. She didn't drive at all. Nothing. And then at one point, in the midst of our 16-hour first-day drive to Amarillo, she goes, well, I'm not tired at all. I can keep going. And I'm like, of course you're not tired at all. You just slept through all of Missouri and Oklahoma. Of course you're not tired. You're fresh as a daisy. I'm the one who's white-knuckling it and seeing armadillos coming out, and I'm seeing, you know, signs for the big Texan are waving to me. I'm like, I'm fine. And then we finally get to L.A. I said, well, do you want to drive now so you can get used to driving in L.A.? Because it is a different animal driving mm-hmm. in Los Angeles. People have absolutely no concept that there are other people on the road to the point where they will literally just stop on the freeway.
Yeah.
Just stop on the 405 for a minute and they're texting, and you're like, we're going 40. Why are you just stopping?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll just make a U-turn in front of you. It's like, okay. So that was the sidebar. But back to Hamilton, because now I've decided, you know what? We're going to be in the car together for a long time and we're going to be, together for an entire week uninterrupted. So I'm going to try my best to listen to this Hamilton. And that's what I kept calling it, this Hamilton. It's 2.5 hours from start to finish to track the soundtrack.
That's a long show.
That's a long show. And
yeah.
that's, so I guess the live show is over 3 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. But,
and you still can't get a ticket to it.
Oh, of course not. Well, you can. You just have to be wealthy beyond your means, which I am. Yeah. I am not. I am going to have to figure out every way possible to finagle this little show
mm-hmm.
into a Hamilton ticket or two. or three.
That's right.
But somehow, some way, I have got to get into that theater now. Because so she plays it the first time. We're about, I don't know how many hours into the journey. Maybe we're past St. Louis. Because in St. Louis, I had to stop. I broke bad this week.
Uh-oh.
There was a Krispy Kreme. I haven't seen a real Krispy Kreme donut shop in forever. In forever. We stopped for gas just south of St. Louis, and there it was right next to a Krispy Kreme. And I was like, ah. So we stopped. We get to Krispy Kreme. We get in the car, and she puts on Hamilton. The 2.5 hours went like that.
Really?
Fast. And I was like, oh, my God. I don't want to tell her that I like this. So then later in the day, we're driving. Now we're somewhere, I don't know, could be Oklahoma, could be southern Missouri.
It was all flat. Didn't matter.
No, it's actually not until you get to Oklahoma's flat.
Well, yeah,
but southern Missouri is great. Yeah. Southern Missouri is rolling hills and beauty. And then, of course, the panhandle of Texas is God's armpit.
Mm-hmm.
But so she put some more of her music on shuffle, and there was some Hamilton in there, which I found fine. All right, let's take a quick break. Because Cody's like, oh, he better have some queued up. If he's a good producer, he's going to have some queued up. Now, I could tell him what songs, but why would I do that? Let's just see if I can identify them. But we'll get into that in a little more of the trip, and then we'll get into some of the real meat of some of the things we did on the podcast that we'll record after. But we'll be back with more of this momentarily on WGN. You've been hearing a lot about MyPillow, and you haven't tried one yet? What are you thinking? Order one today. That's right, I'm ordering you. Order one today. MyPillow is guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you are going to ever own. That's why MyPillow is endorsed by the National Sleep Foundation. The first night you sleep on a MyPillow, you are going to understand why they have sold over 5 million pillows. That's right, 5 million. They come in 4 different support levels, conforming to your preferred shape. They have this built-in cooling effect. You know, it keeps your head cool throughout the night. MyPillow even has a 10-year will-not-go-flat warranty. They're non-allergenic, they're machine washable, and proudly American-made. The best part, though, is that there's absolutely no risk in trying out a MyPillow. Sleep on it. If you don't think it's the best pillow you've ever slept on, return it within 60 days, and you get your money back. That's right, all your money. Go to MyPillow.com, use the promo code WGN for 50% off all products, or call 800-299-9579. That's MyPillow.com, or call 800-299-9579. Use the promo code WGN for 50% off. Monday on WGN TV Morning News. Oh, that's right, buddy. Hold on. Dean Richards talks with one of the stars of Modern Family, plus toys for summer road trips on WGN TV Morning News at Chicago's must-watch morning news. This is all lyrics. I can't talk over Hamilton. Now you may play it. Now you are allowed. That's right.
How does a bastard, orphan, son of a whore, go on and on, grow into more of a phenomenon? Watch this obnoxious, arrogant, loud.
I can't remember if there's swearing in this part.
Me neither. So
you can fast forward it a little to fair. The actual singing part.
That's too late.
Is it too late?
I was getting phone calls from security while that was dissolving.
What's going on? I know. All right. Well, we'll
no one's here for you. We have guests.
Well, listen.
Just don't worry about it.
Well, I have to check since you are not forthcoming when a viable threat is in the building.
No, nothing.
But anyway, I told you I was predisposed to hate this because of her attitude in New Orleans, but also because I'm a huge Aaron Burr supporter. And if you don't, that's right. I've always been a fan of Aaron Burr, even though he was tried for treason. And the story's all, it was great. So we did that. One of the things on the list for me that I really wanted to do was stop, and I know this is cheesy, but I wanted to go to the Grand Canyon, which we did, and that's what I'll talk about on the podcast, part of that. But we also went to Winslow, Arizona. You ever been in Winslow, Arizona, Roger?
No, I've never stood on the corner.
I did it years ago, maybe 12, 15 years ago, when there was nothing there, and I just stopped on a random corner. And this was before cameras in the phone, so mm-hmm. I tried to hold a regular camera out and take a picture of myself on a corner. Didn't really work.
Okay.
Well, in the years since, they have now built a little kind of a GoFundMe funded thing where there's a statue of Jackson Brown under a sign that says standing on a corner. There's a big mural that says Winslow, Arizona. There is a flatbed Ford right there.
Yeah. Cool.
The big intersection of Route 66 there has, in the middle of the street, there's a huge Route 66 logo. It's very cool. It's very touristy and it's very jive and cliche, but it's one of those things that you have to do, especially when your travel companion has absolutely no idea why you want to stop and stand on a corner in Winslow, Arizona.
Now, had you played the song for her before you got there?
I'm sure the song, this is where I didn't plan the trip well. I did not have it on my, I have it a million different places. I did not have it on my iPod.
Oh.
I don't think. And so, of course, I kept, you know, hoping that it would come on one of the satellite stations that I was listening to, and it never did. But she kind of, she figured it out as either while we were there or right after we left or something. She goes, I know it's something about music, because that's the kind of attitude. All my stories were met with that kind of, I know it's something about music. Or, and I would try, like, because as we traveled, I passed a lot of places where I had worked in my stand-up days.
Right.
And there were a lot of stories, 99% of which I could not share with my daughter. So a lot of those stories were, hey, that's the Waffle House where I had my first all-you-can-eat Waffle House experience.
Right.
Hey, I ate at that Cracker Barrel in Flagstaff.
Mm-hmm.
It was, because unfortunately, or I guess whatever, we when we met up with some of my friends in L.A., some of those stories from the past came out.
Oops.
Nothing too horrifying.
Okay.
But enough where she was like, wow, I think she saw a different side of me. But nothing impressed her. None of, oh, I worked in this town, I did this, I was with so-and-so here. But then finally, I got a tiny hint of, oh, my dad did something cool once. Because when we finally got to L.A., we were getting off to go to Burbank to have lunch, I think, and we passed the studio where The Tonight Show used to tape with Jay Leno.
Oh, okay.
And I said, oh, there's the old Tonight Show studio. There's the field where I did one of the sketches, and then I was on something over there. She said, you were on The Tonight Show?
Mmm. Well, so, like, that's something more she could relate to, yeah.
I guess, you know.
Yeah, so, but you're just dad to her.
No, I understand. And I didn't.
Yeah.
I haven't done anything to be that impressed by. I did eat a lot at the Waffle House, the all-you-can-eat. That was in Springfield, Missouri.
Is your picture up on the wall?
I don't know. Probably not. Probably not. And it's not up on any of the dry cleaners in L.A. either. That's a big thing out there. You put headshots in the dry cleaners.
Oh, yeah, the famous
sure, the
people.
Dry cleaners put the headshots up. Yeah. Oh, you know, who got their pants dry cleaned here? That's right, George Clooney, big stain right down the front. Don't know what that came from. Is that right? Yeah, I don't, you think George would want you telling that? Well, I don't know, but it's my claim to fame. That's how I'm still in business. I clean George Clooney's pants. All right, well, after the news, we are going to shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about Irish Whiskey. The folks from Fideau Irish Pub are here. They are having Irish Whiskey Fest tomorrow, so we'll talk to them on the other side of the news. Roger in just a couple on WGN. That is inappropriate bump music. I don't know what that was, Cody. I hit that for the first time ever, and that is some electronica that I am not a fan of. Brian Noonan, 720 WGN. That's a great way to start a segment with a guy who already told me he's a little nervous for no good reason. No good reason at all. Frank Cosgrove is the manager of Fideau Irish Pub here in Chicago. They are hosting a huge Irish whiskey festival tomorrow. If you are not doing anything on a Monday evening, what better way to spend a Monday to say, oh, my God, I can't believe I had to go to work today, than to head over to 100 West Grand and sample some fine Irish whiskey. Frank, thanks for coming in. Absolutely no need to be nervous. If anybody should be nervous, it's me, because now I'm surrounded by, looks like, some sort of Reuben sandwiches and beautiful Irish whiskey, so I should be nervous that I'm not going to make it through the interview.
Fair enough.
Get right up on there so we can hear you, because people are going to go, oh, listen to that brogue. The ladies love the brogue, don't they, Frank? Don't lie to me.
It doesn't hurt, I'll tell you that now.
No, it doesn't hurt at all. So what part of Ireland are you from?
I'm actually from the west of Ireland, from Mayo, a county called Mayo, and a town called Westport, actually.
Okay, my family's from Mayo.
Mayo, oh, really? Yeah. Do you actually know what part? It's a big county, in fairness.
Right.
You know,
Charleville?
It's the second biggest county in Ireland.
Yeah. Is Charleville in Cork? Charleville's in Cork, I believe.
Maybe. There's so many small towns in Ireland, it's hard to narrow it down.
But, when did you come to Chicago?
I first came to Chicago 3 years ago to live here permanently, but I've been coming on and off my whole life, basically on holidays and vacations and things like that, and that's how I ended up making Chicago my home.
And did you come over here expressly to work at Fideau, or you just came to find your fortune in America?
I came to find my fortune in America, and then I just ended up walking into Fideau one day and loved it. And
now you're the manager.
And that's it, hey, yeah, climbing the ladder.
Look at that. Man, oh, man, well, congratulations. That's a success story.
Thank you.
So tell us, for people who haven't been there, and are all, we hear the term Irish pub thrown around a lot. It's any pretty much anybody who serves a pint of Guinness, whether it's a good pint or not, calls themselves an Irish pub. But what sets you guys apart? Because you're a legitimate Irish pub.
Yeah, and I'd have to agree with you on that. Everywhere you go in America, you see shamrocks outside the pubs, yeah, and stuff like that. But in fairness to us now, we are a legitimate Irish pub. I'd say, I'd go as far to say that 50% of our staff that work there are genuinely first-generation Irish.
Nice.
We take on a lot of J1 students every summer, so come the summer there, we have a lot of Irish students floating around the place too, and we just, we're just a general, definitely Irish pub. To
so everybody sounds like you.
For the most part. For the
Which
most
is great,
part.
Because I got used to the brogue with my relatives growing up, but sometimes you start talking fast, it's tough to understand.
It is. It yeah. is, and sometimes you have to slow down and you have to enunciate, which I have to admit, it isn't easy for me, but I'm doing as good as I can now, but it's hard to understand sometimes.
So what sets Fado apart, other than being just a great place to go and have a drink, is you guys pay a lot of attention to your food menu as well, right?
Right, we pay a huge attention to our food menu, and we have a fantastic whiskey menu also as well, and if you're looking for something good to eat or fine whiskey, we're the place to be.
Well, it's nice to have something to lay down a nice base before you start getting your drink on too much.
Well, that's it. That's it. And we're definitely the place for that.
All right. So explain what Irish Whiskey Fest is. It's tomorrow from 6. It starts at 6:30. Again, it's at Fado, which is at 100 West Grand Avenue.
That's it. So we're right in River North. Mm-hmm. We have this is our third Whiskey Fest. So we first off started off with Irish, and then we had a bourbon fest, and now we're going back to our roots, and we're doing another Irish whiskey fest. So like you said, it starts tomorrow at 6:30, runs to 8:30. The tickets are $25 if you buy them online, $30 if you want to purchase them at the door. That's if there's some available. For that, you can sample 20 varieties of Irish whiskey. Yeah, 20.
Get an Uber afterwards.
That's it. That's it. For sure. And it's 20 premium Irish whiskeys.
Okay.
And we'll also be serving apps. And
nice. And the apps are included in the...
The apps are included. And we'll also have experts from each brand.
Well, that's...
They're talking about it.
We'll get into it because I want to know the difference. Obviously, we hear about Irish whiskey all the time, and people hear, you know, Jameson's and things like that. But what makes Irish whiskey Irish whiskey? But do you see, with you guys with the expanded whiskey menu, when did whiskey start to become like the thing? For a while it was wine, then it's kind of craft beer is still a thing, and now it's whiskeys. And you mentioned Irish whiskey, and then you did Bourbon Fest, so everybody gets they have to be very particular about their whiskey.
Absolutely. It's one of these things, it's a phase, and right now whiskey is the thing, and Irish whiskey just happens to be leading at the minute. Irish whiskey has actually grown 17% or something like that in the last 4 years, and it's actually leading in the market again, and we're at the front of it.
Yeah. So what... If somebody comes in, because it would seem daunting, if I hear we have an Irish whiskey selection, or we have a whiskey selection,
right.
I'm going to go in and go, well, you know, normally I have a couple shots, I don't know what it is.
Or you don't care, you're just trying to drink it, and you're trying to get it into you,
right.
And have a good time, and that's it. So yeah, we take a different approach to it there. It's kind of, we have good Irish whiskeys, and we're very proud of the fact, and we are very knowledgeable around it too. So if anyone was to come in to us and say, hey, I'm new to Irish whiskey, or I'm new to whiskey in general, maybe I'm new to Japanese, or I'm new to Scotch, whatever it is, we have a huge portfolio of bourbon, we can say, okay, that's fine. Well, we're going to talk you through the process. What are you into? Where have you been? What have you done? How have you drank? Are you a big whiskey drinker?
Right.
Is this your first time? And depending on the answer they give us, then we can go from there, and we can see what they want, and we can guide them through the process.
Well, the beauty about the Irish is they're not shy about talking to somebody at a bar.
That's
so,
for sure.
So it will be no problem for you to, or one of your people
that's
to get
fine.
Into a conversation.
And we have plenty of people in the pub there that know what they're talking about, and they're more than happy to talk anyone that comes in through it. So we can taste you out on any whiskey that you like, and we can guide you through the process. And
see, and for the uninitiated, myself included, I don't see a lot of subtleties when I, you know,
right.
when I have it. It's just like, oh, okay.
You mean distinguish between Scotch,
distinguish between
Japanese,
different,
Irish?
Yeah, different
yeah,
whiskeys.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. For someone who hasn't really done it before, doesn't know much about it, you can see where they're coming from. But Irish whiskey would be for more of the person who's not, maybe is new to whiskey. Irish whiskey is typically is triple distilled, which means it's sweeter. It doesn't have a huge burn when you drink it.
Ah.
And it's for someone who's starting out, this would probably be the way to go. I know I'm biased, obviously, because I'm Irish.
Well, listen. Yeah, and you grew up drinking it.
That's it.
Because don't you start drinking it right in kindergarten? Instead of apple juice, they give you Irish whiskey.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's it keeps everybody at a nice even keel.
It's a bit of a stereotype, but there is exceptions, yeah.
Listen, you know how it became a stereotype, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Because it's halfway true. That's why it's...
Absolutely, yeah, but
it's a little bit smoother. Is it a blend? Is Irish whiskey a blend, or is it kind of a straight?
Typically blended, typically not peated, whereas a Scotch or a Japanese whiskey would typically be peated, or you would get like a more of a smoky kind of a essence off
okay.
it. Irish whiskey is typically, like I said, triple distilled and it can be peated. I don't want to say that it doesn't happen
right.
at all. It does, but typically it would just be easier to drink, whereas a Scotch, you would get more of an earthy, peaty, smoky kind of a taste off it.
Mm-hmm. And, so like you're drinking dirt.
I don't want to say that.
But I'll say it. You don't have to, Frank. Listen, Frank, I don't want you to get in trouble with anybody. I will say controversial things.
We have a great Scotch portfolio.
A lot of people love Scotch.
Yeah, absolutely. And a huge Japanese and a huge bourbon and obviously fantastic Irish.
I didn't know Japanese whiskey a big thing?
Believe it or not, and I get the same reaction from a lot of the customers that come into us here in Fiddle. It's huge. It's really come onto the market. It's more just like, if you like Scotch, you're going to tend to like Japanese whiskey.
Okay.
Scotch for years was the highest selling whiskey in Japan, so it's obviously, it reflects a lot
okay.
in the Japanese whiskey, but yeah, it's something a lot of people don't know about, but it's huge, yeah, right now.
Very cool. Frank Cosgrove is here. He is the manager of Fiddle Irish Pub, which is at 100 West Grand Avenue. Tomorrow is the big Irish Whiskey Festival. It runs from 6:30 to 8:30. You can go to, where is it, the Fresh Tickets. What's the website where I get the tickets, Frank?
You can just go to
FreshTix.com.
Yeah. FiddleIrishPub.com, and you can follow the links and you can get them on there. It's on, like you said, it's on tomorrow night from 6:30 to 8:30.
And it's 25 in advance, 30 at the door. We're going to talk a little bit more about whiskey. If you have an Irish whiskey question, feel free, 312-981-7200. We'll sample some, we'll learn some more about whiskey, and who knows what else we'll do. Frank Cosgrove is here. More on the other side, 720 WGN. All right, thank you, Cody. That's all right. Brian Noonan, 720 WGN. Do you like Irish whiskey? Do you like whiskey in general? Do you like hearing guys and gals with brogues talk to you in a friendly manner? Well, then tomorrow night you need to be at Fiddle Irish Pub, 100 West Grand, because it is Irish Whiskey Fest tomorrow from 6:30 to 8:30. Frank Cosgrove is the manager of Fiddle, and he is here with us now. Brought in some whiskeys and some delicious-looking appetizers. That's all going to be – appetizers are going to be passed around tomorrow during Irish Whiskey Fest.
Absolutely.
So people can have a little something in their stomach other than fine Irish whiskey.
That's it. They can line the stomach so they can get more whiskey into them.
Now – I'm looking at the list of the whiskeys that are going to be there, and some of the distillers have three or four different kinds of whiskey. Jameson has a number of different ones. We've brought up Jameson a lot, but Teeling's going to be there, Bushmills, Glendalough, Kinahan's?
Kinahan's Irish Whiskey, Bushmills, Glendalough, Tullamore Dew, Egan's, Jameson, and Teeling's are just a few of them.
So there, but some of them, like I said, have a number of different whiskeys. We'll take Jameson's, as I said. Let's go. They have a couple different
okay.
types of Irish whiskey. What sets one Irish whiskey apart from another?
Okay, that's a fair question. Jameson actually have a lot of different whiskeys, whether it's under the name of Jameson or whatever it may be. So we have, everyone will know Jameson.
Yeah,
it's a very recognizable brand. Yeah. So we actually bought in a Jameson Caskmate that we actually have for you here to try here today. Mm-hmm. So this is basically regular Jameson that's aged for a time in stout barrels.
That sounds good, because I like stout, and I like whiskey.
There you go. And this will give it a blended taste. You can taste it there yourself and tell me what you think.
Well, it's nice and smooth.
There you go.
You're right. There's no burn. You did it. Look at him grinning like the devil trying to lure me in. I told
that's
you.
It.
You weren't
going
to have a burn. There was going to be nothing. Drink as much as you can.
I wouldn't lie to you.
Do all sorts of horrible things.
That's it.
So their cask mate, the difference between that and the regular is just that it's aged in the stout barrels.
In the stout barrels, yeah,
okay.
Exactly. That's just one example.
Right.
And then we also have, like, for if you wanted another example, we could do the Jameson Black Barrel.
Oh, and what's that?
So it's kind of the same thing. It's Jameson that's aged in different types of barrels. So this is actually aged in a charred barrel. So it's charred twice. It's a sherry barrel, but it's charred twice, so it gives it a different taste.
Huh. Now, see, and that's something that beers are starting to do that, where they're aging beers in whiskey barrels.
Bourbon barrels, yeah.
So bourbon barrels. So are the whiskey distillers doing that in reaction to the beer people trying it, or is it just a constant evolution of the distillers trying to find something new?
If you ask me, it's just a constant evolution of trying something new and trying something unique that you can bring to the market. I think that will be my answer.
Now, a lot of people, everybody seems familiar. You hear Irish whiskey, you think Jameson, you think Bushmills, some of that.
Now, that would be true.
But you've got all these other brands. What other whiskeys should people, if they've tried Jameson and Bushmill, and they go, I like these.
Yeah.
What's the next step? What's the progression in Irish whiskey?
I don't know if I'd call it a progression. I just think it's the brands that are marketed best in the United States, mm-hmm. as opposed to what would sell the most at home, for example.
What sells the most at home?
Powers.
Really?
You believe? Yeah. Powers
okay.
is a whiskey that you would never really hear over here. You never hear someone ordering a Powers. It's just, but if you go to Ireland, for the Irish, Powers is the most sold, sought-after whiskey in.
Is it better, or is it just marketed better?
It's just, people just prefer it. It's not like it's any more expensive, or there's any different distillation process or anything like that. It's just, it's preferred by the Irish people.
There's no status to drinking it. It's not like,
secret potion or anything like that. It's just the preferred spirit.
So do you have it at Fado?
We do, of
course.
Of course
you do.
We have plenty of varieties of it, too.
That's right, because now how many varieties do they make?
They make a lot. It's hard to narrow down for me to say off the top of my head right now because a lot of distillers use products under different names and things like that. But Powers, they would have a lot. They have like Special Reserve Powers. There's a lot.
All right. Roger, you said you had a question.
Yeah. You mentioned a brand which I was unaware of because my doctor told me it's only available in Ireland, Tullamore Dhu.
Yeah.
My doctor, being the fine physician that he is,
your doctor's telling you to drink.
I have to agree with him.
He has a bar in his office. Literally.
Are you sure this is a doctor?
This is a regular
physician.
I'm positive.
Can I get his address and his number, please?
Actually, his wife's probably listening right now. He's also a former policeman who became a doctor. So
he's
got all these liquors, mainly Irish whiskeys, in his office.
Right.
And one day, a couple of months ago, I said, I was having a peckish kind of day, and I said, hey, can I have a shot? And he says, yeah, go ahead. And I'm looking at him, and I said, Tullamore Dhu. And I go, I've never heard of this. And I put a little in, and one word describing it, smooth. I'm not a drinker. I'm not an Irish whiskey drinker.
But he's a talker.
Wow, it was a great whiskey. And then he mentioned, and I forgot, of course, I was floating on the Tullamore Dhu, but he said that it's only available in Ireland, and he mentioned one other brand that if you drank it, this other brand, you would see God.
Wow. Well, that's fair enough. I think I told him the other brand he's talking about is probably Poutine.
Okay.
He's giving you a small bit of false information there. Okay. Tullamore Dhu, as I would definitely agree with you, is probably one of the smoothest Irish whiskies on the market, but we also sell it and many varieties of it at Fado.
Oh, okay.
So Roger will have to
So your doctor,
there.
From now on, you can just tell him to sign his prescriptions to 100 West Grand.
Yeah, you got a deal.
Go see Dr. Frank at Fado.
That's it. He'll take care of you.
Everybody will take care. All right, we had one other that you brought, Redbreast, and it says single pot still. Tell me what that means.
So single pot still means it relates to malted barley and unmalted barley. It's complicated. It's a mesh that it goes into, but basically it's a pot still, which is a different way of distillation whiskey. Okay. It's basically to not get into it too much, but it's just basically one big pot that they distill the whiskey in, and yeah, that's it. It's a pot-stilled Irish whiskey, and this is the number one pot-stilled Irish whiskey in the world. It won the 2013 Irish Whiskey Award by Jim Murray and other whiskey critics. And this is, like we were just talking about, the Tullamore Dhu. This is going to be up there with just about as smooth as you can get.
There is absolutely nothing, no burn or anything going down the throat.
No.
And it's got a different, I can't put my finger on a different flavor in when it first goes in, too.
Yeah, no, this one is, so what you're supposed to be getting maybe is like maybe some marzipan, dry peel, and a hint of sherry.
I don't know what those first two are. I know what sherry is. Most Tom is like, he doesn't know what marzipan is. Tom, I'm not worldly.
Well, yeah, no, that's the thing.
I drink out of a bag. That's usually how I do it.
That's the thing about whiskey. That's actually a good thing about whiskey, that it's very open to perception. It's like, it's what you make it.
I know
to
it's
be.
Good. Yeah, well, and it's smooth, and that's really all. I don't need an educated palate to go, wow, this is, I enjoy this very much.
No, and I could tell you some things and you could agree with me and it may or may not be true, but that's like I said.
That's right, Frank. It sounds just like tastes just like marzipan. Man, I had a plate of marzipan before the show and this tastes exactly like it. So, Tom, so that's Redbreast, and you've got, again, over 20 distillers coming to the Irish whiskey.
20 distillers, 20 varieties of premium Irish whiskey.
Right.
Yeah.
This is not rot gut, somebody drinking in the gutter Irish whiskey.
No,
this is top
shelf. Definitely not. Definitely not. And at Fido, as we like to do, we mix things up. So we've actually taken a spin on some classic cocktails, American classic cocktails, such as the Old Fashioned, the Manhattan.
Nice.
We've actually taken a spin on that, and we've done it with premium Irish whiskey.
Oh, I'd like to
And
try
it has
those.
Been very well received nationwide in all of our pubs, and it's going down. It's for someone who prefers maybe a sweeter.
Okay.
A sweeter. It's just something different that we do. We've been trying it out, and it's been very well received, and most people will like it.
And you've used the term sweeter a number of times, and it is, it's not where you, because people might get the wrong, it's not where you taste, it tastes sugary, it just doesn't have the burn like maybe a bourbon or a scotch.
Yeah, so a lot of whiskeys like a scotch or a bourbon will have almost like a butterfly effect on your chest where when you're drinking it, there's a strong aftertaste or there's a burn as you're going on, which, don't get me wrong, some people like that, but for a lot of new beginners and things like that, when it comes to whiskey, it's not enjoyable for them.
Very cool. And we've got some beautiful shepherd's pie bites and some, it looks like some Reuben flatbreads. And the appetizers are included tomorrow. Get your tickets for the Irish Whiskey Festival at Fido, which is at 100 West Grand Avenue. You could go to FidoIrishPub.com and get all the information to get your tickets. $25 in advance, $30 at the door, $6:30 to $8:30. You are going to try you're going to try 20 delicious top shelf Irish whiskeys. Frank, it was a pleasure. You had no reason to be nervous. You did a wonderful job.
Cheers, buddy.
You are a credit to County Mayo.
Thank you.
And we will see you over at Fido.
We will do. Thanks
all right.
A lot.
We'll have news in just a minute here on 720 WGN. All right, noon on 720 WGN. In about an hour, Karen Conti will join us. She will answer your legal questions at 312-981-7200. We are talking something with regards to legality, because I cannot get over what's been happening here in Chicago over, well, let's just go from yesterday, shall we? At least 20 people hurt in separate shootings since yesterday afternoon, one man dead. That's since yesterday. That doesn't count Thursday when the truck driver was shot on the Dan Ryan, or all the other shootings that have been going on in Chicago lately. And they say sometimes an issue doesn't really get attention until it hits close to home. Now, that's true for a lot of us. And even though we pay attention here at WGN, because we talk about it all the time, we talk about the news, we read the news, we report the sad facts, and sometimes we gloss over them because there's other stories to report. And at some point, you hear about shootings so much, you become oblivious to them. You just, oh, well, that's the way it goes. Isn't every city having 20 people shot in one day? No. No, most cities aren't having 20 people shot in one day. Most cities aren't having shootings on their expressways or their freeways or whatever road you want to be on. The sad fact is that there have been 500 more shootings in Chicago this year compared with the same period last year. That's according to a Tribune analysis. The Chicago Police Department does not count homicides and shootings on expressways because they are patrolled by the state police. So that's just regular old shootings. But when the truck driver was shot on the Ryan the other day, Thursday morning, that was the 20th shooting on the Cook County Interstate System this year, and the second in a week. So I mentioned that sometimes things don't hit you, or you don't pay a lot of attention until they're close to home. Thank God this story has a happy ending, but and you can get more of the story if you go to WGNradio.com, because the man I'm about to talk about talked to Dean this morning. Brian Altimer is one of Rokon's producers, and I've had the pleasure of working with him many times. He is a wonderful guy, former Marine, stand-up guy. He works hard. He's worked with Ro for a long time. He's head of security at a nightclub as well, so he works very hard. Good guy. So he's driving home from work Saturday morning, and I'm paraphrasing it now. But he posted this. He posted it on Facebook. I'll just read it. It happened last night, early this morning, after I got off from the bar. I was driving southbound on Lakeshore Drive, as I normally do. As I got to Jackson, I noticed a tan SUV driving pretty close behind me, but I paid it no mind because it was daylight out. As I got close to Roosevelt, the SUV pulled up beside me, and the guy, black male in dreadlocks, looked at me and pointed a gun at me. Luckily, I broke quickly and made a right on Roosevelt and called the police. I don't even know if they caught these guys. But I was asked this by my friend, why do I need a tactical vest? So there's a picture of Brian's, he wears a bulletproof vest when he's driving around. Now, this is a guy who's a Marine. I guess you say former Marine, but once a Marine, always a Marine. Why do I need to wear a tactical vest? Because I honestly don't feel safe in my own city. I'm a big guy, but these dudes out here are on some other agenda. I've never been in a gang or anything, and I try to live my life drama-free. Brian is one of the most chill guys I've ever met. Into all sorts of things, music and comics and superheroes, all sorts of stuff. Really cool dude. Doesn't bring any sort of altercations on himself. Let's see. With these recent rash of shootings on the Chicago highways, I think these dudes are doing it randomly for sick fun. So until the Chicago Police Department figures out how to stop the madness, I will wear my vest while driving because I don't feel safe. That is a horrible story, and it's probably happened. Maybe it's happened to someone you know. Maybe it's happened to you. And thank God it turned out okay in Brian's case, and maybe in your case. But it's not turning out okay for many other people. Now, if you've got a guy who was former military saying he's afraid to drive around, and the police and the authorities and other people are doing their best to say, listen, these shootings on the expressways, they're not some, you know, they're spilling over from other places. It's starting as a beef in a neighborhood or in a nightclub, and then it's just spilling over onto the highways. These aren't people who are just laying in wait on the expressways to shoot you. But tell that to the people who are getting shot, the kids who are getting shot sitting in their living room. Tell that to the woman who was shot or the man who was shot minding their own business, going about their day-to-day activities. So, 312-981-7200, my question to you is, are you becoming afraid to live in Chicago? That's an easy question, yes or no. The harder question, and the question that, listen, if I had the answer to it, I'd be mayor. What are we going to do? Because we've got a situation now where the police are constantly having to look over their shoulder because they know that every action they take is being scrutinized. And a lot of those actions need to be scrutinized. But we've also heard reports that maybe it's making some officers a little gun shy, no pun intended, to, you know, they're not shirking their duties. They're not, pushing things under the rug, but maybe they're second-guessing things a little bit. So what do we do? How do we stop this? Is this something that is just going to be a cycle that maybe we work ourselves through? But you know what happens once the temperature starts rising. Every summer, we see an increase in shooting. And if we've already had 500 more shootings this year than we had last year, what's going to happen in July and August when we get to 95 and 100 and the humidity is 110%? And people are already angry. And this is not about gun control. This is not about saying, oh, we've got to, you know, but something's got to be done. Is it a matter of just making sure that if you're arrested with an illegal gun, there's no probation, there's none, no soft sentence? That if you commit a crime with a gun that's not registered or even that is registered, you're doing time? Is it a matter of zero tolerance when it comes to police checking people for weapons? Or is it just, you know what, hunker down and pray for the best? Because that's pretty much what we got to do now. We've got to hide our head in the sand and pray that we don't get shot. And it used to be you were safe if you went out, you know, oh, if I live in the suburbs, I'm fine. That's not true now. There's people getting shot everywhere. All right, so where's it safe? What are we going to do? And why are we forgetting, you know, the people that are the people that are getting shot that have. I'm gonna this. I don't care what you think about this. If you're a gangbanger and you get shot by another gangbanger, oh well, that's the way it goes. That's one less gangbanger. But the problem is those gangbangers don't take target practice, and they don't care who they're shooting at. They don't care who they hit. And that's where we have to, because you can't keep saying, oh, well, another kid got shot. Or you go through the list of these people who were shot over the weekend. They were just standing around. There was a 25-year-old woman walked into the hospital after getting shot in West Garfield Park. She was just standing outside, and some male attacker shot at her. Another guy, 36-year-old man, a 35-year-old man, and a 20-year-old man were standing on a corner. And they got shot. Youngest man hitting the right foot. Just, man walking in the alley. He gets shot. People just getting shot all over. So what are we going to do? 312-981-7200. I got to find out what you think. Are you scared? Did you listen to this story about Brian, Rose producer, wearing a tactical vest? And your first instinct after you're like, well, thank God he's okay. My first instinct was, hey, where does a guy get one of those vests? And Maybe that's overreacting, and I don't mean to be histrionic here and getting you all worked up, but it's happening more than it's not. This is not how it's supposed to be. So what do we do to stop it? We'll talk to you on the other side. 720 WGN. Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city, with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. 500 more shootings in Chicago this year than at this time last year. 20 shootings on local expressways just in this since the beginning of the year. Truck driver shot Thursday. 20 people shot in Chicago in separate incidences since yesterday. Yeah, pretty good. I'm sure tomorrow morning, when they've got the news on Steve Cochran's show, you are going to hear about more shootings today. So 312-981-7200. We talked about Brian, one of Rose's producers, who had a gun pointed at him the other morning, and he said he's scared to drive in this city. So even though he is a Marine, former military, he wears a tactical vest. Are you afraid? And what do you think we can do about this? Because it's gotten way too out of hand. 312-981-7200. Some of the texts coming in. You're right, Brian. It is just so much lately that it's absolutely incredible and scary. And the way it is so random. People getting shot on the highway. Terrible. Terrible way. There are too many. Very afraid. From the 847. I'm afraid for my children who are in their 20s and out there on their own. We tell them to be careful. But they think, yeah. They're aware of their surroundings. I made sure they do that. Something has to be done. I just don't know what. You are so right. There have to be repercussions. Somebody from the 815, bounty hunters. I think that might be extreme, but listen, extreme measures may need to be taken. Another 815er, I live at the Wisconsin border, and I'm afraid to get on to 90 and then 94 to go see my sister in South Bend. I stopped doing it because I don't want to take my life in my own hands. Now again, we're not trying to be histrionic. We're not saying that the minute you get on there, it's not Mad Max. But it's a number that is definitely concerning. If you don't think that 500 more murders this time this year, as opposed to last year, is concerning, if you don't think that 20 people shot driving around isn't concerning, I don't know what's going on. 312-981-7200. Tom's in Harvard. Hi, Tom. You're on WGN.
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So what do you think?
I don't know what they can do about it. It's just out of control.
It's very scary.
I was out there working, replacing cameras. CPD cameras.
Okay.
And the areas that we're in, a lot of the times we would have to have police escort. And most of the times, the cameras we're replacing were shot out. And we're putting in high def cameras.
Yeah, that nobody wants the cameras in their well, the people who are going to be caught on the cameras don't want the cameras in their neighborhood.
No. And it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, listen, Tom, I appreciate your call. Stay safe out there. Yeah, it's one of those. I'm not going to overreact. It's not like I'm going to say, "Oh man, I'm not driving anywhere. I'm not putting on a vest." But I am going to be a little more cognizant of my horn beeping and finger tossing, because listen, if people are willing to shoot you over nothing, then nothing will be enough to instigate them. Now, you, Roger, you were saying that you have, as a former teacher, you have some students that you are friends with on Facebook, and what's their take on this? Because it's a city school.
Yeah, very much so. And a lot of them now in their mid-20s, late-20s, and they have families, and they are moving out of the city, even out of the state.
Well, last week there was the big article about so many people are leaving Illinois for a number of reasons, whether it's jobs, whether it's taxes, the budget, and crime was a huge motivator for leaving not only, as you mentioned, not the city, but the state.
Yeah.
They're leaving Illinois.
Yeah. A lot of their comments were the reason they're leaving, specifically because of the crime. They cannot stand the number of people that are getting shot, that it's not safe to even walk outside their house with their children. And here's the other thing. When they were in school, all I heard were all the stories about their relatives and friends of their age then, the teenage high school kids, who were getting shot. Every day we would see a story about somebody's relative, somebody from the school, their relative, or even somebody from the school who had been shot and killed. Yeah. And it is getting too much. This number, and I've been doing news now for almost 50 years.
700 years.
Exactly.
Since the first newscast.
And this is beyond any comprehensive thought I would have about crime in a city. Right. In a war, sure, you got that. But this is outrageous.
A random, a beautiful Saturday.
Yes.
Beautiful. The weather couldn't have been better.
Mm-hmm.
You would think the sun is out, not a cloud in the sky, beautiful weather, and still 20 people get shot.
Yeah.
So, again, I brought this up. Yes, exactly.
Here's the thing. It's incomprehensible because there's no reason.
Doesn't matter. We're shooting people on the expressways for no reason. Of course, the authorities don't want to panic people. So these aren't random. It's all just, it may not be random. Some of these shootings may have actually been instigated in a neighborhood. But the fact that it's allowed to happen, and I know the police can't be everywhere, and I know they're saying now they're going to beef up patrols, unmarked patrols, undercover, which is great. That's what we need to do. But then people are going to go, well, listen, the police we're paying a lot of money for overtime and blah, 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 blah. So where do you draw the line? The huge rally yesterday on the South Side with all those people wearing red T-shirts and everybody talking about jobs and all these kind of things. And that's all well and good, and that's all something that needs to be done down the road. But nobody is going to open a business if they think that they or their customers are going to get shot just for coming to work. Nobody's going to invest money where they think it's a war zone. So how do we get that away from being a war zone? How do we make those changes? And why are we focused on so much other stuff? And I'm guilty of this too. A couple of weeks ago, we spent a long time talking about a museum, which I still think is a great idea. And yet that weekend,
a lot of jobs,
a lot of money coming into the city.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And there was a great editorial that maybe we'll get to, maybe we won't, about tourism. And that ties in with that. But listen, you can have all the great tourist attractions you want. If your city has a reputation that people can be killed minding their own business, just going about their day, how much tourism you think is going to come? How many conventions are going to rethink where they want to be? And you know what? Unfortunately, the neighborhoods where a lot of this is taking place aren't where the conventions come. So the city is able to turn their back a little bit and go, well, we're going to work to contain it. We're going to work to remedy it. But so far, it hasn't hit us in the pocketbook. Remember, what was it, last year or a couple of years ago when there were the gangs on Michigan Avenue?
That's
right. We paid attention then, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because it came to the money. 312-981-7200. If you're on hold, hang on. I will get to you on the other side of the news. Please be patient. We'll do that after this. 720 WGN. Thanks, Roger. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Karen Conte will be here after 8 o'clock. She'll be answering your legal questions. We've been talking about the shocking uptick in shootings in Chicago, and there's no other way to put it. You try to ignore it as much as you can because you don't want to think about it, but every weekend we're forced to think about it. Now you get in your car and you don't know if you're going to be the next one shot on the expressways. And I know there will be people who are saying you're being an alarmist. There's only been 20 shootings this year on the expressways. Only 20! I guess you're right. There's only 20. However, in other shootings in Chicago, there have been 500 more. I've done my talking. I want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. That's the phone and the text. Are you afraid to live in Chicago with what's going on? And what do you think should be done? We'll start with Jim. He's in Prospect Heights. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Excellent. I hope I'm not the number 21 for this year.
You and me both, brother.
I told a gentleman that answered the phone. I used to work for Edison.
Uh-huh.
And probably close to 20 years ago, myself and another man were on a pole in a very influential area in a subdivision. I mean, in a suburb.
Okay.
And it was a kind of a woodsy area. It was shortly after a storm. And we thought we heard, first of all, bees. And it turned out that it was actually, I think, BBs passing through the leaves of the trees.
Oh, geez.
Probably close to a dozen. So finally, we figured out what house it was coming from. We had our cooler on the ground, called the police. The police came out. Two young kids, and they were in their 14 in that range. Said through the windows, they said they could not let the police in the house. There was no parents at home. And the one kid hollered out, besides, we're underage. You can't do anything to us. That was his exact words.
Jeez.
So the mentality of shooting even at any object was, not the best at that time.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Jim, stay safe. To think, well, there's no value on human life. And I know that gets thrown around a lot too, but it's true. People are shooting each other for nothing. And then they're trying to shoot somebody and they're shooting innocent people. So nobody seems to have any value. And I don't know what's going on. Now you live in the city, Cody, and you finished your dinner, and I see that you've opened your mic, so you must have some thought.
I think it's this country. This isn't a global thing, and I'm not trying to be unpatriotic and saying, you know, America's so violent, but in this country we do glorify violence, and this is coming from a guy that plays violent video games.
Yeah, you play violent video games all the time.
I'm not saying it causes them for me or for the majority of people, but maybe, just maybe, having constantly glorified violence is taking its toll on our culture and our society. I was watching a clip the other day on YouTube of some show about World's Worst Rampages or something.
Okay.
And they did this story about a guy who went crazy in a bulldozer, put a bunch of concrete and metal around this bulldozer and went on a rampage in the town. And it was interesting, but at the end, what the narrator says in this reality show of voices, he says, and in the end, the police finally got through, and the man had killed himself, and no one was injured. But it caused $12 million in damages. But the way he said it was, the life and the human toll and the safety of people was a complete afterthought.
Yeah.
All that matters was $12 million in damages, because that was all that's valued, is money.
Right.
Not the human life, not the guy's mental well-being, not the people whose homes had been destroyed, just this cost money.
Well, listen, there'll be more people. We kill, you know, you kill some people, there'll be more people coming right behind us.
Yeah, apparently.
We're flush with people. We have a lot of. Common sense and value of life and all that, we don't have too much.
There's problems with this culture. And I'm not saying I have any answers, but there are problems. And I don't know what has to change either.
Well, and you know, we'll throw out the big answer. Well, education and jobs would solve some of this. Maybe. But you know what? That's way long term. We got to figure out something short term. Because, as I said before, you're not going to get any businesses, you're not going to get jobs in areas, it doesn't matter where that area is, where people are afraid.
Well, listen, I'm from Rockford, and I hate that I have family members there, because Rockford is very violent right now. I use this like anonymous app to post to college students, and I was in Rockford last weekend, and I went out, and the first post on the app was, did anybody hear those gunshots?
There was a text from Rockford. From the 815, Rockford, where we live, is just as bad this year. I know police are doing the best they can, but I wonder if all the bad press they've received of late doesn't make them think twice. And I know we've had more fatalities of police officers just stopped at a light as well. So sad. And yeah, you've got to, again, I have no problem with police oversight. But when it comes to the point where now we're second guessing and the criminals know that and the criminals are going to step up their campaign of terror, well, I don't know. It just becomes a day to day thing, right? Eric Erickson, Country Club Hills. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Brian. I wanted to make a couple of quick comments. One, a lot of the south suburbs that were once nice have become nothing more than an extension of a bad police district in Chicago. Now, last week, down the block and around the corner, literally, there was a drive-by shooting with one fatality and one person got wounded. I heard the gunshots, and it sounded like a machine gun, and that's no exaggeration. And then I heard the sirens, and I saw a couple of squad cars, you know, go flying up the street. And what bothers me the most is that it's not even really newsworthy. And I will grant you that, you know, all the network news stations, you know, 2579, you know, had mini cams out there and everything. But as far as the local paper is concerned, the local paper will do 3 days of how the girls' volleyball team in the suburbs to the west of us, which are nicer,
right,
you know, won their national or state tournaments or something or other. And here you get a drive-by shooting, and it's just a little blip in the paper, and that's it, because it's become par for the course.
Yeah, it has become, and that's unfortunate. And then you also have newspapers down in that area that's owned by one company, and then they throw a couple different suburb names on different mastheads, but it's all the same news. It doesn't matter what's, you know, what paper you pick up. If you're in Country Club Hills or Chicago Heights or over in Mokena or New Lenox, it's the same paper, basically. They just put a different name on top.
Exactly. And it's par for the course, and it's not really newsworthy anymore because it happens so often.
And that's got to be the scariest part. Aside from it happening, the fact that we've all just come to accept it scares me to no end. Eric, thank you for the call. Eduardo's near Midway. Hi, Eduardo.
Yeah, I was going to talk about us having more trade schools and maybe young people getting into like 2 years of Army service or something like boot camp. But, you know, when Phil Klein was superintendent, didn't they have those like special units where they were kind of like just targeting specific groups of people? And now with this backlash against the police, now that's kind of like not even have a chance.
Oh, yeah. You can't have any sort of targeting. You can't have stop and frisks. You can't have a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it's. You can cite all kinds of numbers that say those kind of things tend to work, but then there's always abuses of those kind of policies as well. You know, but I like the idea of trade schools. I like the idea of, obviously you got to educate people to get them jobs. You've got it, but, you know, we live in Illinois, Eduardo. We got no money. Our leaders, our elected officials can't agree on anything. So to try to get funding for any kind of program like that, unfortunately, is somewhere long down the road. And that's what we have to battle against.
I heard that they're telling these young people going to college, please go to Indiana, Wisconsin, Iowa to go to college, because guess what? no dinero here.
Right. We're not funding. We're not funding our colleges. So do you think? Do you think if they're not funding the colleges that people will actually pay to go to, they're going to make a priority funding programs or trade schools or things that people aren't going to pay into just to, you know, train somebody to get a job? Unfortunately, I don't see it happening.
The tax base is shrinking.
Yeah, and it's shrinking more and more every day. People are fleeing Illinois for a number of reasons. Eduardo, thank you for the call. Let's take one more. Robert's in Waukegan. Hi, Robert.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Okay.
So what's going on?
Oh, no, I back to the thing we were talking about, my house, Chicago, the Chicago State Military.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm going to put it like this. You cannot, in Chicago, I know as you grew up as a kid, you went to the park, right?
Right.
Mom and dad took you to the park. Mm-hmm. You cannot do that in Chicago now. You cannot take your kids to the park.
Yeah.
You're either going to get shot or killed in the park. And so that's why I say it's so, it gets so bad in Chicago. When I'm from Chicago, I have to say it, but it's crazy.
Well, and people don't want to believe it because they think, yeah, well, that's only this neighborhood or that neighborhood, but it's so widespread now, it's everywhere.
Yes, everywhere.
And, you know, where I live, we've had shootings, and it's unsettling because everybody wants to, I don't care what neighborhood you're in, I don't care what you do for a living, the one thing you want when you go home at night is to feel safe with your family. You want to think that you can walk outside and not have to worry that your kid's going to end up dead. You want to think that your kid can sit in their bedroom and not get shot through the window. And again, I don't care what color you are, what your profession is, that's a basic tenant of all of our lives. And unfortunately for too many of us, with all the guns out there, that's not happening anymore. So I don't know. Robert, thank you for the call. Let's take a quick break. We'll get some more of your calls. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. That's how you get a hold of us here at 720 WGN. Karen Conti will be joining me after 8 o'clock. You have a legal question? 312-981-7200. All right, we've been talking about guns and shooting and the horror that has become Chicago, and I don't use that term lightly. And if it hasn't affected you, thank goodness. And if it has, you know, and you know, I think all of us should be affected by the reports that we're hearing every day. Used to just be Mondays we would figure out, oh, how many people got shot over the weekend. Now, you know, get people shot on the expressway, truck driver on a Thursday night, 20 people on a Saturday. We have a tally runner. We should get a big tote board, Roger. We should turn this into a game show. If the city doesn't seem to want to do anything, let's go all Running Man on this situation. Let's turn it into a crazy thing. Put it on TV.
Put it in the window.
Right.
Put it in the showcase studio
just
window.
Just have a big tally. We'll find somebody to sponsor it.
Yep.
And, oh, Brian, you're being distasteful. Yep.
No.
Yes,
you're being
I am.
Factual.
Sure. I'm just, listen, if that's how we're going to treat it, we're going to treat it as like it's no big deal. Let's not make it a big deal. Let's make it a scratch-off game. And let's play the numbers. See how many people are getting shot every week. From the 312 Noonan, my wife and I are actively pursuing a move out of Chicago, out of Illinois. Corruption, crime, fiscal irresponsibility. We pulled our heads out of the sand. From the 847, I'm scared to drive home from work at midnight. From the 708, trying to stop access to guns for criminals is impossible. The new tax on bullets in Cook County punishes the legitimate owners. It seems like a radical change in penalties for illegal ownership or use of a gun in a crime may be an option. Yeah, that's what I brought up earlier. You have to make sure that there is absolutely nothing. No question. You get caught with a gun illegally, you're going to jail. That's it. Where are we going to put everybody? I don't know. We'll think of that down the road, too. We'll just start stacking them like cordwood. I just drove across country. You know what? There's a lot of empty space in this country. A lot of empty space. We could just wall off a whole big area. You know, not to be nasty, but there's big portions of Oklahoma and Texas and stuff and New Mexico that are beautiful, but they're empty. So let's just wall it off and dump some people in there. It's like that movie No Escape with Ray Liotta where they put all the criminals on an island.
Oh, that's right.
Let's just do that. Because quite frankly, yeah, just build a huge wall and then get people, you know, let's go all sci-fi on them. Put the little explosive in their neck like in Escape from New York. And if they cross this line, their head blows off. I don't care. Just we got to figure out something. And yes, that's a far-fetched idea. But is it a better idea than doing nothing? I don't know. You decide. Well, Brian, I love the scenery in New Mexico. I'd rather do nothing. Okay. That's fine.
A little clarification, if I can. And I understand what you're saying. Things are being done, but on very small scales because it takes tax dollars in order to try to raise the employment rate, to provide these vocational training programs. You know,
well, I
taught one in high school, you know.
But they're not going to give money to train.
Exactly.
There's not money for...
They're trying to do stuff, but it's so small. They are trying to do stuff, but it's so small that it is not having an impact to offset
the huge number of
shootings.
Let me put this in a language that I know you and Cody will understand.
Okay.
There is no try, only do. All right?
Thank you, Master Yoda.
That's exactly right. Catherine is in Carroll Stream. Hi, Catherine. You're on WGN.
Yeah, hi. I was listening to the show, and I'm hearing so much of this, and I've had this thought for a while. It was not so long in the past that New York had big problems. And then, wasn't it a mayor came in and changed it? Was it a mayor, I think, came in and changed everything around? And today they say everything's so improved. Why don't we, go to them? What did you all do? And see if that could be done here. Why not?
Listen, I'm not against any kind of idea. If getting suggestions from another city would help, fine, bring them in.
I mean,
if we've got to pay a consultant to come in and work with the city for a little bit, swallow your pride and do it. If you can't handle it on your own, get some help.
Exactly, and I agree, and I've had that thought. Why not? Hey, they did something. Obviously, it worked.
Yeah, no,
you know.
Catherine, it's a great idea. Hopefully someone in power is listening. I agree with you, but I don't carry much weight around here, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, I don't know who does anymore.
You and me both. Thanks, Catherine. Janice is in Glenview. Hi, Janice.
Hello, Brian. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. What do you think?
Oh, just going on a couple of levels. One of them is if the people that are doing the shooting are terrorists. They're terrorists in our city. And they are holding all of our neighborhoods hostage.
Mm-hmm.
They make you think twice before you even go out of the house. But we're talking about educating children, teaching them that violence isn't the answer. But when people with educations make their money on violence, whether it's films, first they glorify it, and then they say, oh, isn't that terrible? But first they're showing it, and they're glorifying it. And every film you see has violence of some sort, whether it is a rape scene, whether it is a murder, whether it's a gang-style murder. Nobody in the neighborhoods can or will step forward. If they know what's happening, they're afraid to come forward. And I feel that it should be treated as if it were a terrorist thing that's going on in our country, which it is. It's undermining our children, it's undermining our teachers, it's undermining, more importantly, our police officers who have to do their work with their hands tied behind their back so they don't offend anybody.
Yeah.
If you are arresting someone and they run, why are they running? Because they probably are guilty of a lot more than what they're just being pulled over for, or they wouldn't just run.
Yeah,
they run and they create a situation that becomes a volatile situation.
You make some good points, Janice. We have to change the way we look at this, and we have to change the way that law enforcement reacts to it. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Bridgeport. That's where John's hanging on. Hi, John. You're on WGN.
Good. You said something about swallowing our pride, solve this problem. I call in the National Guard. I would try to keep every neighborhood safe that way and put them on every corner. I know it would look terrible.
Yeah. No, well, John, you're breaking up, but I get your point. Yeah, he is breaking up, but John's point, the National Guard, and that's been, you know what, that's been brought up before. Do we need to bring the National Guard in? And you know what? I don't know. At what level do we reach the point where we say, you know what? A military presence in our city is needed. Is that going over the line? I would hate to see it. I think we have a police force that is under fire for legitimate reasons, but also is capable of handling this. I don't know why we're not, other than the fact that the police force is too small and the population is too big. But what are we going to have? A policeman for every, are we going to have a police force that matches the population of the city? You can't do that. So where do we go? I don't want to see tanks rolling down the streets. I don't know. Maybe Cody does in his neighborhood. I've seen his neighborhood. Tank couldn't hurt it.
I'd rather see tanks rolling on the streets than more people shot.
Right on. Steve's in Logan Square. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Good. I'll try and keep this brief. It's a pretty big issue. The
sure
thing that disappoints me about all the conversation about this is everyone wants to fix this tomorrow, which I understand why, but it's just not possible. Like,
right.
People don't understand. You can't just put more police on the streets and stop this. What you need to do is you need to shrink the recruitment. You need to get involved in the community. You need to reach out to these kids who are getting recruited into these gangs at 12, 13 years old and give them something else to do with their time because they have no money. Their parents have no money. There's nothing they can do. And so, you know, I've started to get involved. There's meetings in every Chicago neighborhood called CAPS meetings. And you meet with police. You hear about the latest crimes that have happened. You know who the known gang members are. The community needs to get involved, and they need to help these kids find something to do other than get involved in these gangs. And that's not going to fix the problem overnight because the people who are in the gangs are in them. And until they get shot or arrested for something else, they're not going anywhere.
Right.
And we need to start focusing on fixing this for 5, 10, 15 years from now because aside from more police, you can't just magically make this go away. It doesn't happen. And a good book recommendation to anyone who's moderately interested, this is not a new problem. Back in the 90s, this guy did this amazing study of gang life, basically, and the book is called Gang Leader for a Day, and I wish everybody would read it because you might actually, this sounds crazy, but you might actually empathize a bit with the people who get sucked into these gangs and why they're in it.
Right.
And I'm not saying it justifies anything they do, but we dehumanize all of these people, which is why we have no interest in going and trying to help them find a better life.
Well, and you're right on a lot of counts, and Steve, and it's one of those things where we want the quick fix. Everybody wants a quick fix, and we're trying to look long term. There's got to be a two pronged approach. We have to do something in the short term that's going to at least cut it back a little, and then lay the groundwork for the long term solution. And it was called Gang Leader for a Day was the book.
Yeah, that's the name of it, and it was written by a guy who was in Cabrini Green, basically, in the 90s.
Okay.
It's fantastic. It's a great read.
Good deal. Steve, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. All right, let's do this, and then Karen Conti will be here, and she will be answering your legal questions. Do you have a legal question? Of course you do. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. That's how you get your legal question answered on the other side of the news here on 720 WGN. All right. Hey, do you know what's coming up Friday, the 27th? Yes, it is our WGN Radio Walk of Fame induction, and you are invited to join us. You want to come down? It'll be fun. I'll be there. I'll be dressed up. Oh, I look good, Cody. You don't know what I'll be wearing. This year, we're going to recognize 7 honorees in an induction ceremony on Friday, May 27th at 10 a.m. outside the Tribune Tower on Pioneer Court. Bring a chair. Because we don't have any. Bring a chair and enjoy the celebration commemorating Max Armstrong, I love Max, Floyd Brown, Jim Carollo, Dan Fabian, Marilyn Miller, Tom Peterson, and Dean Richards. This is a strong class. The other two classes have been strong. This is a strong class as well. Come and honor these fine folks. That day you can also follow our live blog online at WGNradio.com. Visit WGNradio.com/Walk of Fame for details. Again, that is Friday, May 27th, 10 a.m., rain or shine. Come on down and honor these great WGN legends, and you'll see the current WGN people. I almost said current legends, and then I thought, well, I don't want to refer to myself as a legend. People know that already. Sunday night after the 8 o'clock news, Karen Conti comes in, and she joins me to answer your legal questions at 312-981-7200. Did you get in a legal predicament this week? We've been gone 2 weeks, because you weren't here last week either, were you?
Right, I was not.
No, so who knows what people have been doing in the last
here.
2 weeks?
Yep.
Now, listen, we know what you've been doing, because you have your new summer haircut.
I do.
Let me ask, as a guy who's had the same haircut for 28 years, probably...
Yes.
How traumatic is it? And I know my wife is, and my daughter, is it traumatic when you have to change your haircut?
No, well, I don't really change it like from really long to really short, but sometimes I just get bored. Like,
okay.
I'm just bored with myself. I'm bored the way I look. I'm feeling like I'm getting older. So you go in and you try to do something a little different. So you walk out feeling fresh.
But you can't go too crazy because you have to be in court. Right?
Oh,
like,
right.
If
no,
you were like,
right.
You know what, I'm going to shave half my head and make it pink, and then you go to court tomorrow and they go, oh, Miss Conti, did you have a stroke? What happened to you?
I got
to
keep it pretty safe.
Were you hitting the head?
Pretty safe. You got to keep it safe.
Well, sure. And then you want to go on TV, and none of the TV people. people are going to watch it. Yeah, there's the.
It's got to look good on television. That's one of the most important things about television is your hair.
You
got to
look good.
It does. You do.
That's what's held me back. That's the only thing that's held me back from a TV career.
I did television for years, and my mother would watch me, and she'd call up and she said, "Good job." And I'd say, "What intelligent thing did I say, Mom?" She goes, "I don't know, but your earrings really look pretty." My own mom didn't listen to me, so you know.
It's all about looking pretty. You know that, Karen. We all have to look pretty. That's why we went into radio, because we look so pretty.
That's right.
All right, a lot of, not too many, big legal things going on over the last week, or maybe I just haven't been paying attention.
Well, you were busy driving down that road.
You have to drive, you got to go all, I loved it.
I loved it too. That was one of my favorite trips. I've been all over the world, I've been to Bali, I've been to Europe. I loved my Route 66 trip.
It's
almost
fun.
Right up there with anything else I've ever done.
And there's some great cheese along the way. Not cheese like that you eat, but cheese that you see and go, man, this is cheesy. We stayed at a hotel in Kingman, Arizona, a Ramada, so a chain, a hotel, that was completely painted white, and then all these old showbizy paintings were all over it.
From
Elvis to John Wayne to Marilyn Monroe. It was, and they weren't even really good. But you knew who they were, and it was the whole theme of the hotel. It was hilarious.
It's fun, and it's fun to see what America is really like outside of the big cities. And right. A lot of people just don't do that anymore because flying is so easy, much easier than it has been. Like maybe when we were kids, we couldn't afford to fly.
Right, exactly.
Places,
nobody flew.
So we drove everywhere, and the in-between is the cool, cool stuff. Yeah.
It reminded me of why I used to love to drive. Because here, I hate to drive.
Yes.
The minute I'm in the car, I want to kill somebody because I'm just enraged. But all of a sudden, in the middle of New Mexico, looking at the mesas and going like 80 miles an hour and just, it was like, this is why people like to drive.
Yeah.
Because you just get in your car and you go. And yeah, every once in a while you pass a truck or another car, but everybody's kind of cruising and enjoying themselves, and it's wonderful.
I just like going into the little shops and antique stores and talking to people and finding out what's important to them. And it's interesting because, sometimes people are all the same. You know, you go all over the world. They all have the same thoughts in general, but then they all have a little different twist. Mm-hmm. You know, what's important to you in New Mexico is different than what's important to you in Oklahoma City and all in between. It was a great opportunity for your daughter, too.
Yeah, and then
whether she knows it or not.
Well, she'll figure it out one of these days. Maybe, maybe not, but you know, you go through these towns, and I would say this, and she would say it every once in a while. You'd see these little towns in the middle of nowhere, and you go, how did people end up here?
Right.
You know, and why are they staying there? What is it that keeps them on this little plot of land in the middle of some plain somewhere
and
in North Texas?
What do they do?
Right. What do they do? Where do they get their groceries?
Yeah.
Where do they, all the little things that we take for granted. It's like, do they have cable? How do they communicate?
Yeah.
What's going on? And maybe they don't. And it would be, for a day, it'd be cool to find out. I don't know. I don't know if I, as much as I romanticize living in the middle of nowhere, like, you know, Ted Kaczynski, I want to have a shack somewhere. I romanticize it, but I still like enough modern conveniences that I don't know if I could live in the woods or in the middle of nowhere for that long.
That would be a great reality show. There probably already is one because I don't watch television. But, like, you know, what's it like to live in this town, you know, New Mexico.
Yeah, somewhere
just
New Mexico.
Just plant yourself for a week there and just become part of the scenery.
Yeah, because is it that you go to town once a week for groceries? Is it, how do you...
There's no Peapod, probably.
Yeah, nobody's delivering. You couldn't go to your favorite fish place after the show. You'd have to, you know, go catch a fish somewhere, kill it, and then eat it yourself. Have Jerry skin it. Jerry, can you scale a fish? No, see, Jerry's gonna be no help in your big pioneer lifestyle change. And what kind of law? I'm guessing like frontier law. There's not really. There's like one lawyer that goes around on a horse from town to town.
Probably, and he's got to do it. She's got to do it all.
Yeah.
In towns like that, I know the judges sometimes. That's what they call them, circuit judges, because they used to ride the circuit.
Yes.
And they go from town to town and sit on the bench and hear the cases in that particular town.
You're in jail till the judge gets here Thursday.
That's right.
Man, yeah, that's. You wonder if some of that's still going on.
Probably. It's just, I can't imagine what it's like to actually go to a high school where there's, you know, 40 kids in the high school.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And who stays in the town and who leaves for the big city?
I don't know. And you know there's always that story of the one kid who couldn't wait to get out of that town. And then they explode to be something huge. And
that's right.
I came from a town of 300 people. Oh, my God. 300 people. 300 people are in this building right now. That's not a town. That's a gathering.
That's right.
That's a crowd. So it was nice, and it's amazing to see how much open space is in this country, because we all feel so crowded all the time. We feel so trapped. And then you get not far out of the city, and it starts opening up. And then you get further out, and it's like you go hours and see nobody.
Right.
Nobody and nothing.
And you know what's interesting, too, though, is back when we were kids, you saw all the mom-and-pop diners and the motels and the locally owned things. And that is diminishing a little bit.
Right.
So you'll have more of the Applebee's and the same old things that you
see. Well, the interstates killed a lot of those
towns.
It
did kill it. But that was interesting, too, because you always had something unusual to look at.
And you say that with a nostalgic gleam in your eye. I'm wondering if on a trip you would stay at one of those little mom-and-pop hotels. Did you really?
You know, my father was a professional comedian.
Right.
So when we were kids, instead of flying, a lot of times he couldn't afford to do the gig to fly. So he'd take the kids and we'd spend the summer going from place to place,
nice.
Catskill Mountains, we were here or there. We saw the whole country, really, by the time we were 14 or 15. And my mom would make sure we stopped in the little towns and we learned the history of what the president did here and all that. And so we stayed in those little motels with the little swimming pools and the little diner in the office. And I have fond memories of that.
It's very cool. All right, I don't know if you were listening when you were coming in. We were talking a lot about the gun violence in Chicago.
Yes.
500 more shootings to this point this year than last year. 20 shootings on the expressways, 20 people shot since yesterday. And I put it to people what they would do, and somebody texted in and said, please ask Karen what she would do about the gun violence in Chicago. So we were all trying to come up with different things, and, you know, everybody wants short-term solutions, but it's a long-term problem. Is it a police problem? Somebody recommended the National Guard. There's all kinds of theories, but what can we do? Because as a resident of the city, we all have to be worried about this.
I'm probably going to get grief no matter what I say on this topic, but I think what the number one thing that I think is the correct way to look at it, this is gang related.
Okay.
So gang people are shooting each other and shooting others and other people who get in the way. And my understanding from what I've seen in the system is that a lot of kids and younger people will use guns. They'll go to jail for just a short period of time, maybe go into the juvenile detention center, and they get out and then they commit these other crimes, which are much more serious. So, again, we can't do anything about having guns. We're all going to have guns, but we have to have them legally. These are not legal guns for the most part, so gun laws aren't going to change anything.
Right.
And we have a constitutional right to have them. So I'm thinking that maybe we prosecute the younger people a little bit more strictly and a little bit more harshly. We're so crowded in the jails anyway, right. So that's a problem. But again, if you are committing violence with a gun, maybe you go away for such a long time that maybe it becomes a deterrent to actually get caught with a gun, committing a crime. That's what I can think of.
And that's what I said, too, that we have to stop messing around. And if you're caught, you're doing time.
Right.
And we figure out where to put you.
And we don't just get the kids off, you know, back on the street, because
right.
the big guys know that the little kids don't go to jail for a long time.
Exactly.
So they give them the guns and they tell them what to do.
Yep. Karen Conti's here. Do you have a legal question for Karen? Of course you do. 312-981-7200. Get those in now, and we will answer. Well, Karen will answer them. When we come back, people always wait, though, and then they say, oh, now it's Monday, and I didn't ask Karen my question. I should probably ask it to her now. How would I do that?
You would call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right, your questions for Karen on the other side, 720 WGN. This week, Brittany and Elliot roll back the clock to a simpler time and roll out the best retro restaurants at Chicago's Best tonight at 10 on WGN-TV. Karen Conti's here. She's answering your legal questions. 312-981-7200. That's the how you call. That's how you text. That's how you get to us here at WGN. All right, let's go to the phone, shall
we? Let's do it.
You ready?
Yes, I am.
All right. Let's see. Well, I guess we will start with Dave in Pawpaw. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, good evening. I called a couple weeks back about a law that I got passed, and that it was asking you if it legally, if once it was cited, does it become law? And then you stated, so now here's my follow-up question. Now, the law is on the books, but it's not being used. Who do I need to talk to make sure that it is being used?
So is this, you're calling about the idea that we're taking, there's a law that says that if you're a felon and you're in public office, you don't get your pension. Is that the law you're talking about?
Yes, ma'am. It's the 95th General Assembly, 0947.
Okay. Well, you know, I think they do enforce that. I mean, didn't they do that with George Ryan? I'm not mistaken if they went under that particular law or another one. As long as it's related to your actions while you were in that office, I believe that they are enforcing that. If they're not enforcing that and you think they should, I think that what you probably would have to do is to talk to the state's attorney's offices, because they're the ones who bring those charges. The U.S. Attorney's Office is the federal agency that prosecutes cases, and the local attorneys.
No, it's not federal, because I went through that. It has nothing to do with federal. I would need a state attorney, and that would be Madigan's office. And then I filed a complaint with the Inspector General against Madigan's office, asking them why are they not citing this law. And so far, the answer to me is it's a Madigan.
Against who do you think they should be citing this law against, or using this law against?
You know, he's probably right. It is Madigan, because what this is this probably gets to the pension people who are going to pay the money, and so now it goes to them to decide whether or not. So it's probably not a prosecution as much as it is an enforcement when it comes to the pension people paying out the funds. So it probably would be Lisa Madigan who would be giving the pension people a written opinion.
All right. Well, Dave, hopefully that helps a little bit. Sorry we now Dave has called twice, and I still don't quite understand what the question
is. Well, I mean, there's a law out there that says if you commit a felony while, just say George Ryan committed a felony, which he did, he was convicted of it, while he was a Secretary of State.
Sure.
So the pension that he was entitled to for that period of time, is my understanding, he would not be entitled to those pension funds.
That part I understand. Okay. Why would a private citizen be trying to...
He must feel strongly that felons should not be getting pensions from the government.
That makes sense.
And I don't know what and I think there's a law that's passed, but are the pension people actually denying pensions to felons? Right. And I always thought that they were, because every time I hear these names that come in the newspaper every day, that they're being denied their pensions and they have to fight for them.
Maybe just a high profile. Who knows?
Yeah.
Let's go to Dixon. That's where Jeff has been holding on. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there.
What's your question for Karen?
I called back in September and I had asked Karen a question about an attorney, my attorney, who was representing me in a child visitation issue for my son. And my attorney had actually met with my son, even privately, to discuss with him having his custody changed. And I kind of didn't think that was right, and I called back in September, and Karen had said, yeah, that wasn't really correct, that an attorney should meet with your son and discuss with your son that, hey, we're going to go ahead and we're going to get your custody change and all that. But that was back in September. But I want to follow up with you. I don't really know which way to turn here, and I'll just try to make this as simple as I can. My attorney... the child representative who was appointed by the judge found out through my son that he had been promised by my attorney that his custody would be changed. My attorney then, while we were in a hearing to hear about this suspension of my parenting time, my attorney kind of just folded up and quit. And I lost then this hearing. I have not seen my son in 9 months.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
My attorney then quit immediately and called me into her office, and she said to me point blank, are you going to report me to the ARDC? And, you know, I never thought of doing something like that. And she said, well, I'm going to not charge you for my fees, and we're just going to be all done with it. And that's basically what happened. I then went pro se, and because I couldn't afford an attorney anymore, and I haven't been able to get anywhere. But the thing is, I immediately said to the child representative about this meeting, and he said that, yeah, he knew about it and that it was highly improper. And I said, will you please let the judge know that the reason why my son is having the behavior that he's having, which is that he refused to go to school in protest, is because of what my attorney told him. Well, the next time we got in front of the judge, the child representative didn't say a word about that. I then motioned the court for a reconsideration of the earlier ruling, and the judge dismissed my motion without any argument or any reason. And I once again said to the child representative, you need to say something to the judge about that my former attorney caused this big mess, and all this child representative ever has to say to me is he wants me to pay his bill in full.
Okay, you know what? I'm just going to cut you off because you have like 20 different issues here. Number one, what do you do with an attorney who did something improper? I mean, that's almost witness tampering. I mean, and you don't talk to a child, you know, as an attorney because you might be suggesting things, you might be overpromising. You just don't. I've never done that, and I've heard some lawyers do that. That was improper. Can you report her to the ARDC? Yeah, you can, but you're not going to get any relief, and you're not going to see your son. Your child rep, a child representative, is someone who's appointed by the court to really just focus on the child's needs and interests and to report back to the court. So that person is sort of a neutral. You got two parties who both have lawyers who are fighting over what they think is the best interest of the child, but this is the person who's supposed to be standing up for the child. Here's my thought on this. Just big picture is every child should see both parents unless there is a serious problem of abuse or neglect or something like that. The fact you have not seen your son in 9 months and he apparently loves you and wants to be with you is wrong, and the child representative should be doing something about that, whether it's having supervised visits or doing something to get you back into the stream of visitation, or we call it now parenting time. So, I don't know what to say because I don't know all the facts. I don't know why you're not seeing your child. I do know that you probably need a lawyer. You probably need to find some money to get a lawyer to go back in and get the judge's ear to get you some parenting time.
But, I can end this by saying I found an inexpensive attorney on a limited retainer because the child representative has filed motion for civil contempt of court against me because of my inability to pay his bill in full. And that now the child representative tells my new attorney that he doesn't know anything or never heard anything about my former attorney having this inappropriate meeting. So this whole thing, it's all trying to be hidden, and I don't know what to do.
It sounds like a big mess, but I would say you should pay your child representative because that person is the one who's making recommendations for your son, and if you go hire another lawyer and pay your lawyer some money but not pay the child representative, you're not doing yourself any favors there. So you really should pay that person. I know you don't want to because you don't think that person's doing his job, but it just sounds like a bad perfect storm for a mess here.
Yeah, sounds awful. Jeff, good luck.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't give you any more specific advice there.
Yeah, we got to take a break before we go to the news, but how can people get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800. Better yet, email me with some of the facts and where it is and what you need. kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
News next on WGN. Noon and Karen Conti, 720 WGN. Karen comes in on Sunday nights, and she helps you out if you are in a legal predicament, if you have a question. Something happened? Did somebody in your family try to screw you out of inheritance? Did you get stopped by the police? Is there something horrible in your legal future? Well, Karen can help you out. 312-981-7200. Listen, we got to make it very scary for people. To go in without a lawyer is ridiculous anymore, right?
It's
almost like I equate it to working on your car. Back in the day, when there was a carburetor, you could take a popsicle stick and get your car to start. You could work on things yourself. Now, cars are too technical. The law is very, very technical.
It is, and it's a shame that there aren't more user-friendly places for the law. For instance, you know, this guy that was just talking about his child custody. I mean, yeah. So many people have issues with their children and divorces that maybe it should be taken care of more simply. You know, why do you have to have someone at $400 an hour, you know, argue about seeing your child?
Right.
You know, but that's the nature of how it is. I mean, I wish there was a computer you could put your facts into and it would spit out the answer and you would have to live with it. But it's so human, generated, driven, that every fact is different and everyone wants their say in court, and it's so emotional, but yeah, it's the necessary evil of having to get a lawyer.
Well, and you know, I've said this many times, so it's not a secret to you. I don't begrudge anybody making a living. I think everybody should be able to make a living, and if you're really good, you should make more than somebody who's not really good. But when I hear somebody talking, like our last caller, about, you know, I've got to pay, you got to pay an attorney. okay, that's a cost everybody has to eat, whether you're rich or poor, you got. But then there's all these other costs that go into trying to just to see your kid. And it's almost, I can understand at some point why some people start to feel, well, the law is only there for people with money. Because if you don't have money, you don't really have access to the law. And it's, again, that's not an indictment of attorneys getting paid to do their job, or people who are child advocates or whatever branch of the system they're in getting paid. Everybody should get paid. But it makes it that much harder for an average person or a person with limited income to get the best legal access they can.
Well, and because I think people are still idealistic about our system, because our system really is a wonderful system. Mm-hmm. But I think people are idealistic that money shouldn't matter when it comes to it. Like I just had a family send me, they wanted me to handle a criminal case. I'm not doing criminal work anymore, but it was a very serious murder conviction. Jeez. That a lot of people thought the guy didn't do it. I mean, he was an actual innocent guy. And he told me how much money he had to spend, and it was very little, and I'm trying to shop it around to find a lawyer to do it for that small amount of money. And the people that I'm getting to say yes are people that I just wouldn't even recommend. So, you know, it does matter if you have the money. And it's sad, but that's the truth.
Yeah, well, listen, that's why some people drive one kind of car and some people drive another kind of car. And it is sad because you think, well, car, the analogy, that's a luxury. Our rights aren't a luxury. But I guess finding the right people to protect those rights and help us represent us in court, that is a luxury.
And one of the things I do want to say in addition to that, especially in the family law realm, if you have a chance to mediate, okay, people don't understand what mediation is.
Yeah, explain that, because that's a way to do it without dropping a big ton of cash.
Well, mediation is you have a mediator who's a middle woman, who's going to sit in the middle of the room and bring the parties together to resolve the case. That person's not going to rule. Person's not binding. But the mediator can't tell somebody what to do. But he can bring you together and say, so you want to see your kid 4 days and you want to see your kid 5 days? Well, why don't we do it 1 week off and 1 week, you know. So they bring you together and they come up with creative solutions. The judge is a person who works for the government, who wears a robe, who's going to make a decision having known your family for all of probably 5 minutes. He is the last person in the world who should be making a decision. I just had a case this week where I told the parties that, and they were so receptive to my idea that if we walk into that courtroom, you think you're so right and you think you're so right, the judge could have a completely different view of what right is and do something completely different.
Yeah.
Not what either of you wants for your child. And then you're stuck with it.
Right.
You know, so mediation is the way to go. You have to put down your pride. You have to not roll the dice. You can't be stubborn about this. And you get a mediator and you try to resolve it the best you can.
And especially when it comes to your kids, and you've talked about this a ton here, and I know you've talked about it with Steve too. When it comes to dealing with your kids, you have to be the adult. You have to be the one who bends, because in the long run, the only person you think you're punishing your spouse or your ex-spouse, you're punishing your kid. And obviously there's cases where there's 100% you keep that other person away.
Well, and people get this idea of what's fair. I want 50-50 parenting time because 50-50 is fair to me. Well, maybe it's better that your child sleeps in the same bed 5 nights a week. Maybe not. But think about how you grew up. It was nice to have your bedroom every night, wasn't it? If you grew up in an intact family, maybe you have different views of parenting than I do. But I always think that you should just put yourself in that child's shoes. You will be a good parent. You can spend quality time with your child, for the rest of your life. But to put the child in the middle of it and to basically waste a kid's college fund to get an extra day, it makes no sense.
Not at all. 312-981-7200. Karen Conti is here. She's answering your legal question. Mike has a legal question. He's in Chicago Heights. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Mike.
How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, this is like the most complicated and long story in the world, so I'm going to try and reduce it to the smallest thing possible. Basically, I have a mortgage. I had a mortgage with City Mortgage back in 2008 when the economy crashed. I called them because I was behind on a year of taxes, and they threw me in the modification department. Long and short of it is, I was back and forth with them for modification. They couldn't account for my payments. They couldn't give me detailed information on where my payments I was making went to, while their collection department kept calling me, even though I was making payments, asking me why I wasn't making payments. Within a month's time, I went from a call from them saying I was approved for a modification. 2 weeks later, I was denied the modification. The same day I was denied, I came home and found a demand letter for the full amount of the mortgage. And then a week and a half later, they contacted me to short sale it, and then they sold it. And before they sold it, they served me foreclosure papers. The new mortgage company, yeah, so...
So where are you now? The house was sold?
No. They served me foreclosure papers. Yep. I went to a mediator, and I met with a mediator and the lawyers for the mortgage company, and they said, there's no one who's going to give you a modification. We move to foreclose. So they told me I had to be out of the house in 6 months. Then I went back home, and the mortgage company that had bought the mortgage called me and said, why didn't you turn your modification paperwork in? I said, well, your lawyer said no one's going to give me a modification. And they said, well, you've lost your chance at a 2% reduction through a government program. And that, long and short of it, is I went back and forth with them over and over again. Finally, they sold my mortgage to someone else, who then sold it to someone else, and no one's contacted me in over 5 years now.
Okay.
Okay. Now, this is like, I can't answer this question. This is way too complicated. The only thing I can say about this is it's not uncommon to deal with a bank these days and have one answer from one person and another answer from another person, and you have to document everything. And even if you do, they can still turn around and decide something else. It goes with short sales. It goes with modifications. It goes with all of the programs that they have. Once you're in the court system, you know, there's some mediation, like he said, Mike, like he engaged in some mediation. Mm-hmm. You know, what I would do is I'd recommend an attorney. I've got a guy who does, all he does is foreclosure work and mortgage work, and he tries to negotiate these things, and if not, he can try to keep you in your house for a while until you get yourself on your feet. I have a person who does short sales. So if you have a problem like this, shoot me an email. That's the best way to do it. You have to tell me where your house is. You have to tell me where you are in the system and where you are in the process, and I can send you a name of somebody who might be able to help you.
And what's that email address?
kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right, Mike, good luck. Send Karen that email, kconti@kcontilaw.com. And again, include as much detail as you can, right?
So yeah, except you know that, like in something on. Like this, this is like the back and forth. I can't.
So you just need, here's my house, here's where it is now.
In a case like this, yeah, I am in foreclosure. I got served with the papers. I have 30 days to answer. Give me the time deadline so I know what you're, you know, where you are in the whole system.
Very simple.
Yep.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we have a trust question.
All right.
We love trust questions here on WGN. We'll get to that and more. 312-981-7200. Karen Conti's here. She's got your answers. You have the questions. I have the buttons. WGN. Well, thanks, Cody. I guess that's you. You've been hearing a lot about MyPillow. You haven't tried one yet. Order one today. MyPillow is guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. That's why MyPillow is endorsed by the National Sleep Foundation. First night you sleep on a MyPillow, you'll understand why they sold over 5 million. That's right. They come in 4 different sport levels, conforming to your preferred shape. They have a built-in cooling effect. Keeps your head cool throughout the night so you don't get those nasty sweat stains on your pillow. That's gross. MyPillow even has a 10-year will-not-go-flat warranty. They're non-allergenic, they're machine washable, and they're proudly American-made. But the best part is there is absolutely no risk in trying out a MyPillow. Sleep on it. If you don't think it's the best pillow you've ever slept on, then just return it. Within 60 days, and you'll get your money back. Yep, all your money. Go to MyPillow.com, use the promo code WGN for 50% off all products, or call 800-299-9579. That's MyPillow.com, or call 800-299-9579. Use promo code WGN for 50% off. Conti's here for a little while longer. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. That's how you get your legal questions answered. Let's go to Robert. He is on the road. Hi, Robert. You're on WGN.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks. What's your question?
All right. I was involved in an estate of trust, and I hired an attorney that happened to be a state prosecutor in the state of Indiana. And what happened was this individual and their little group asked me if I wanted to invest some of my inheritance that I was going to receive in drug distribution. Well, they had, in the meantime, shown me all this, how their operations work here and in Joliet and so forth, and with the state prisons and with the legal system and so forth. And I had a witness that came forward and said that this attorney and the judge and another individual were going to steal the all the assets from the estate, and whom he passed away by not natural causes within 2 weeks of them knowing this. Well, anyways, what happened was the estate attorney, the first thing he did is he hid portion of the will that has the formula and the distribution, you know, directions of the will. He hid that from the court and then distributed it as he liked. They then got caught embezzling from the estate, and a hearing was to be called to return it to good state and return this information and the lost assets. And these guys not only continued to steal from the estate, but they forced me to sell my Lakeshore Drive 4,700 square foot home on 1703 Lakeshore Drive in Long Beach, Indiana.
Okay, hold on. So, Robert, once you determined that the estate attorney was stealing, why was he still representing the estate? And could you fire him? Were you the executor?
I was the hiring. I was the what you call the controlling heir, because of the distribution portion of the paperwork shows that I received the most, so I had the power to do the hiring.
Okay, so why couldn't you have brought a motion or hired another lawyer to get him ousted based upon the fact that he was embezzling money from the estate?
I did that. I had a second attorney I hired to overwatch them to do exactly that, because we had an idea that they might do that.
Okay. So,
and at that point, they called I wrote formal letters that were notarized to remove them from the estate, and the judge refused. And then we also had a hearing to remove personal representatives and have a formal accounting. And they refused to process that.
Okay, so hold on a second. There's something wrong here, because if you're telling me he was stealing and it was documentable and it was provable and the judge is not doing that, there's something I'm missing. Because obviously, when you go to a judge, and if a judge sees by provable evidence that a lawyer is stealing, not only will that lawyer be taken off estate, but that lawyer would be reported to the state bar, and that lawyer would be losing his law license and maybe even being prosecuted by a state's attorney. So there's some piece missing here that either you're not telling me or that I don't get.
These individuals asked me to join and invest my funds. And when I refused to, they got upset. I found six other families they have done the same thing to and had submitted to the Supreme Court with pure fact evidence from court documents. And these individuals, the judge was forced to resign because he was found to be drafting false
It sounds like a John Grisham novel. So I don't practice in Indiana, but I guess big picture here is, if I were you, I would get together with the other families, pool together your resources, get an attorney, get these people reported to the bar with a coherent, professionally written complaint, maybe even get a forensic accountant or someone to come in and do a report and an analysis of what they took and how they did this very similarly in all these different cases, and report them and sue this lawyer. He's probably got insurance, and see what you can do to get your money back. That's the best advice I could give you.
All right. Good luck, Robert.
I hate to hear lawyers doing bad things. And, it doesn't happen very often, Brian. I think most people who go to law school and college, it takes you 7 years to be a lawyer, and it's not an easy job. But most lawyers want to keep their license, and so you don't see this very often. But you do see it.
Sure. And I would imagine
it's tempting for some people to steal
when there's huge, huge amounts of money involved. But, it's hard. It's hard. In your defense, and even here, and for me, listening to some of the questions, there's so much, and there's so many levels of the story. It's like, wow.
Well, and common sense says that if you can prove that a lawyer is stealing, why didn't the judge remove him?
Yes.
There's something missing there
that
I don't know about,
or
that he's not telling you, or it could be as bad as he's saying.
But the whole system is corrupt.
Yeah.
That happens too. Crazy.
I mean, but it's...
I don't know if you'll know, this is a kind of a credit question. If your credit card has been turned off by the company, can anyone get into your account?
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know what that means either. If the credit card company says you can't use your car anymore, I guess.
You mean like some other
user?
Well,
then the account is closed.
Is frozen or closed. Yeah. I don't think anyone could get into it.
Right, if it's closed, it's closed.
Would make sense, but
well, listen, sure. A lot of things make sense, but we don't know what half of them are. So you doing any big media stuff? What's the big what are the big things we can look forward to on the horizon? Is there any Supreme Court stuff coming up?
Not really. We did a little bit on is it Phil Mickelson? I don't even know how to say his name.
Mickelson.
Insider trading. That's an interesting case. I don't know if you followed it at all, but it looks like he's not going to be prosecuted, and a lot of people were trying to figure out.
Yeah, they just wanted to give the money back.
Yeah. And what's interesting is insider trading is, you know, it's basically when you get information from somebody who's in the corporation that you base your trading or your selling or buying stock, and that's a no-no. But what happened here was there was a person A who was in the business who gave the information to a person B, and that person B gave it to Phil.
Right.
So Phil maybe didn't know that it came from person A, and therefore he's not technically culpable under the law of insider trading. So he basically got very, very lucky because the amount of money was almost $1 million, and he could have spent some time in jail for that.
Now, if I work for one of the major brokerage houses, let's say.
Yes.
And I'm, you know, you and I are out to dinner, and I just happen to say it. Now, do you, as the person who goes, Brian's pretty smart. He gave me this tip. Maybe I go buy some of this stock. Do you know? You don't know it's illegal, or you?
It doesn't really matter.
I was going to say, how did? Where's that line?
The tipper. Okay, so the person who works for the company is liable if he breaches a fiduciary duty, which means he says something that is an insider information that breaches the loyalty to his company, and he gives it to somebody who is going to benefit from it and does benefit from it. So he would definitely be liable. The tippee is harder to prove.
That's what I was saying. The tippee. Where does the tippee get
involved? I maybe didn't know that was insider information. Maybe I didn't know that it wasn't public knowledge. Maybe I didn't know a bunch of things, and therefore that could be a defense. But being ignorant of the law
is no defense.
Right.
We know that.
So if corporation president says, I'm giving you some insider information, and you don't know that there's a law, you still violate it by taking that information
and acting
on it. That sounds
fishy right there. That statement doesn't sound right.
But by the way, insider trading stuff, stuff happens all the time.
I was going to say,
all the time. People get drunk. They say things. They talk to their girlfriend. The girlfriend talks to their girlfriend. The grandgirlfriend talks to their brother. And all of a sudden, the person just made $1 million.
Right. And just because, and even the tipper didn't
maybe
realize they were doing
it.
Yeah, they were just talking, and it comes out. All right, we mentioned lawyers doing things incorrectly. Ed's in Naperville. He's got a story. Hi, Ed.
Hello.
Hi, Ed.
Hello. Sorry to explain that to whoever was there. Started in foreclosure since September of last year, and I hired a lawyer. I think I hired one, I'm not sure. And he just said, okay, I'll go to court on December 28th. Don't worry, I'll do the paperwork for your court case and get an extension or something like that. So I went to Minnesota where my wife's parents live, and I've been working up there. And he said there'd be a court hearing at the end of February of this year. And so I asked him about it while I was up there, and he said, towards February. So he went December 28th. Got to whatever he's supposed to do with the paperwork. He didn't go to the 28th. He just said there's no for 28th.
And we got a break pretty soon. So get to the crux of the question.
Okay. He didn't tell me about any court cases that were in March. That happened in April, and then I found out in May that there was a court case. So I went, and May 3rd, he didn't show up, and the judge ordered him to show up. The next court case, May 17th, he didn't show up, and then he signed something red, and he didn't show up. So I can't hire another lawyer. He said that he told the bank attorney to tell the judge that he wasn't going to be in court that day.
Okay, obviously that's wrong if you're telling me the facts. And here's what you need to do when you hire a lawyer. Make sure you get a retention agreement. What is he going to do? How much is it going to cost? Is he going to hire? Is he going to go into a mortgage foreclosure? Is he going to try to negotiate something? Is he going to file an appearance in your case? Meaning, is he going to participate in the litigation? You should always have that. I'm not saying you don't have that, but I'm just giving some general advice to people out there. Always have that.
Right.
So you know what the lawyer's supposed to do. And then when he doesn't do it, the first day he doesn't do something, you can, you know, let him know and let the judge know, and you can figure out what you need to do from there, like maybe get a new lawyer.
Yeah, good luck, Ed. All right, listen, time is come and gone very fast. Now, you are taking the holiday weekend off, so you will not be here.
I will not.
Can you deputize me to answer legal questions? Is there anything you can do, like grant me some sort of provisional power?
I don't have insurance that strong, Brian.
Right. So no legal questions will be answered next week. Correctly. We'll
unless you want to do a phoner. I can do a phoner.
Right, well,
if there's anything of importance, well, we can talk
we'll talk during the week and figure that out.
We'll do that.
Enjoy your holiday.
Thank you,
talk to you after this. How do people get a hold of you quickly?
312-332-7800 or Kay Conti at kcontilaw.com.
All right. Now Cody can just...